Socks on 35th is next. Doors open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Duke Coughlin, and welcome to the Socks on 35th podcast. We are back with a bit of an emergency episode with some big news breaking here. We are back covering your Chicago White Sox. As always, I'm joined by our panelists, Jordan Lazowski and Nick Gower. I'm just going to skip into how we're doing because I feel like we're going to talk a lot about how we're doing in this episode. So I'm going to skip right past that. Plus, I don't hear from you guys yet. I'll hear more than enough. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you get your podcast. Also, be sure to check out the website, socksdown35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at socksdown35th. All right, gentlemen. The elephant in the room. The Dylan Cease trade finally happened. I have plenty of thoughts on it. I'm just going to go ahead and pass it right on to Jordan here because I know Jordan is very much a Dylan Cease guy, similar to I was. Jordan, raw thoughts, raw emotion. This is an emergency episode. How are you feeling about this trade?
You ever wonder, like, if you could ever get to know you were in the good days before they were gone? That's the raw emotion of it right there. It's coming. It still stinks. We can get into the ins and outs of it. I'm not over the moon about the return. I think some are, but we can get into that a bit further. But the raw emotion is, yeah, you knew it was coming, but it still stinks. Like, that's the reality of it. That's baseball. That's being a fan.
Yeah, I think Jordan's reaction is pretty indicative of most fans right now, more especially in the sense, not necessarily on the return, but more so on, you know, you saw it coming and it still kind of hurts when it happens. Personally, I was pleasantly surprised by the return, especially because of the rumors that were going around the day before of what the Yankees and Rangers were offering. I was kind of scared, actually, of that rumored Rangers offer from Ken Rosenthal. I like hated it and was like already had resigned to the fact that it was going to happen, and then it didn't, and we got something, in my opinion, that's way better. So I'm happy with it. And, you know, it sucks to see Dylan Cease go. Of course, he was a great pitcher who ideally would have signed an extension here, you know, in a perfect world. But we don't live in a perfect world, and this is what happens. So we can dive more into the return, of course. But my initial reaction was more positive than I thought it would be, which has been a long time coming for anything White Sox related for me. So I'll take it.
So obviously the return, just to catch everybody up who hasn't heard about it, it was Dylan Cease for Samuel Zavala, a fairly big prospect, a young prospect for the San Diego Padres. This deal was definitely sweetened with Drew Thorpe. That was kind of the big one. He's a guy who's been just striking out everybody at the minor league level. And a guy I'm about to absolutely destroy his name, Jairo Iriarte.
I give you a pass on that one.
I think it's probably Jairo, but otherwise the last name was
Jairo Iriarte. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'll do some research on that. I do know, though, that this guy throws absolute heat. And to your guys' point, being a Chicago fan across the board for as long as I have, anytime enough rumors get hot enough that something's going to happen or one of my favorite players is going to get traded, because Dylan Cease genuinely, you know, from getting him from the Cubs and watching his development and seeing the star potential in him early on, even when he was struggling, it'll always hurt. And especially when you see the team talking about it kind of candidly that, you know, he's being shopped. And, you know, I think Grafal had a comment the other day where it was like almost completely confirming that they were like shopping him. You know, that was a lot more candid than most teams are going to be about a situation like that. But I kind of ripped this Band-Aid off probably like a month ago, where it was like kind of admission, you know, it was like just accept it. It's going to happen. Whether it's going to happen now, whether it's going to happen a little down the road, just kind of get it out of your system now. And that's kind of what I did. And I've had to do it with other players, even like Chris Sale in the past. You know, it's just one of those things you have to kind of accept. So as I am today, I'm kind of more just relieved to get it over with because I knew it was going to happen. And I think the return, you know, as Nick pointed, is pretty strong. I'm pretty happy with the return. There's not like the sexy absolute top prospects in the Padres system in there, but they did give up quite a bit to get Dylan Cease, and that's if they're able to, you know, keep him around long term, which the San Diego Padres, if the last couple of years, has been quite the run franchise. So I don't know. It's really hard, you know, and I'll let either of you guys kind of jump in here, but like it's hard for me to be too emotional about it. I'm just trying to see the positive in it, you know, as positive as I can be, knowing Jerry Reinsdorf is my owner. You know, I think you have to be able to take everything with a grain of salt when you're a White Sox fan. And moving on from Dylan Cease, and, you know, we're back in the cycle of talking about prospects and the future and blah, 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 essentially, because we just went through this not too long ago. But, you know, I feel like if we sit here and we just continuously complain about the idea that we're always talking about prospects, like we're never going to be happy as White Sox fans. I think as far as, you know, what the rumored offers were from the Yankees and other teams, especially with how the Yankees were really holding their top prospects, you know, kind of tight to the chest. It is a little ironic that we did get Drew Thorpe because he was a pretty highly touted prospect for the Yankees not too long ago. So I think Getz, as far as doing this trade, you know, we talked a lot about the idea of, you know, the optics of whether or not he nails this trade. And I think all things considered, he did a fairly good job.
I'm just not there yet. We can talk a little bit about the return now. I will say, let's get this out of the way. I am glad that, like I said, you rip the Band-Aid off, you make the move. They did it before he made meaningful starts, or rather non-meaningful starts in the 2024 season. Thorpe, I'm not in love with like everyone else is. I don't know why. The lack of overpowering stuff will always concern me. Uriarte's probably my favorite piece. I think it's exciting that he's the second piece. And the third piece, Zavala, I like. Young, raw power, really, really interesting arm, or really, really interesting bat there. It's frustrating because we continue all of these trades, all of these signings, everything that's been done so far this offseason, even the good stuff. Like this was a B to B plus trade. So you're like, why is Jordan complaining about this? Because the reality is, where is the star talent going to come from eventually? I think that's a legitimate question that needs to be asked at some point. We have a bunch of guys who are going to be great depth guys for a very long time. Thorpe is probably a three starter. Nestrini might be the closest one to a potential ace at the top of a staff. You got Montgomery, Robert. Caro's not a stud. He's an above average potential baseball player. Where's the star power coming from? If last rebuild's success was, or the problem with last rebuilds and its lack of success was that there was no depth, well, now there's no star power. Oh, let's go out and buy it then. Oh, wait. We don't typically spend enough money to go out and buy the star power. So it's like, when you make a trade like this, yeah, if no one's going to give you multiple top 100 prospects, fine. But you've got to get one slam dunk. And I don't think any of these three, as highly touted as they are, and I can see the upside, I don't think any of these guys are slam dunks. And I think that's a concern.
I don't know if any of them are slam dunks. I'll agree there. But I do think that it's, I don't know, I think there's a bit of nuance there. I'm not accusing you of not grasping it, but maybe you should just clarify. Like, for example, if you look at a guy like Thorpe, everyone likes to throw out the Giolito comparison for him. Kind of ironically, because, you know, great control, great changeup, etc. But I feel like there's a little bit more ceiling there, which is also not to be reductive of Giolito. Giolito was a great pitcher in his prime with the White Sox, like a true ace for a three-year stretch. But with Thorpe, I mean, it's not like he's just getting by on that control. Yes, his fastball is 91, 95 range, but he still, you know, has great strikeout numbers in the minor leagues and doesn't really walk guys. Like, there's a reason he's as highly touted as he is. Yes, maybe more of a three starter projection, but if he just he's what 22 years old, if he just adds, you know, 1 or 2 miles per hour on his fastball, nothing crazy, which is very possible. I mean, Christian Mano's already doing it with the Diamondbacks right after being traded. I know he's younger, but still, like, it's not a crazy jump, I think, just to see Thorpe as potentially a top of the rotation guy. And that's just one example, but do you kind of see what I mean, Jordan? I think there's still some ceiling there that you might not be acknowledging.
It's not that I don't see a ceiling, I just think it's too low of a ceiling for what you gave up in return. Like, again, the days of getting top 20 prospects for guys in trades are gone. I get that. I wasn't expecting maybe the Robbie Snellings of the world, because that's maybe a little bit too high just based on how we've seen things go. Like a Dylan Lesko probably would have been a little bit more appealing to me. That's more of an arm, not a slam dunk, but that you can dream on that. It's like Thorpe just doesn't wow me personally. He might come out, fix the fastball shape, add a couple miles an hour, make me look like an idiot. Wouldn't be the first guy, won't be the last. But when we've done these trades before, when we've seen these trades across the league, a lot of times you at least get one guy who are like, oh, wow, that's nice. It felt like another quantity type move that doesn't have no prospects of slam dunk. Maybe that's poor wording for me, but it didn't have someone like, oh, wow, like that could be coming. That could be really, really good. And if he hits the ceiling, watch out. Who's that here? I don't know. Maybe it's Iriarte. I'd venture might possibly be him. But getting three or four guys for Cease, I would have rather gone with two, gotten like a Lesko and maybe Zavala, and felt probably a little bit better. I'm just not wowed by this. Like I would have hoped to be in a Cease deal.
So I got to side with Nick a little bit here as far as it goes with Thorpe. You know, I think the idea of having overpowering, you know, velocity on a fastball, I think is something that a lot of people look for. You know, it's kind of it's the sexy pick. It's where you're always going to see the top prospects in baseball as far as pitchers. They're always going to have absolute gas. The thing with Thorpe, though, is like when you watch, and, you know, I have to admit, I have to watch some more on Drew Thorpe because I was only able to, you know, see a bit. But just from hearing about him in the minors last year and watching the clips that I have, this guy irradiates confidence. Like he is always in complete control on the mound. And we've seen guys in Major League Baseball who haven't had overly powerful stuff, who have made long careers and pitched some elite baseball. You know, I think, you know, Lance Lynn is probably a recent example. He's somebody who always attacked the zone, always was able to place his pitches. And, you know, Lance didn't, you know, we love Lance's fastball when he fires it back and everything like that, but it wasn't necessarily overpowering mild, like velocity wise. You can't really consider it like insane fastball across the league. You know, it was kind of on the above average side of things. You know, got some heat, but he just always knew where to place his pitches, and he knew pitch sequencing, and sometimes that's enough. You know, there are places for pitchers like that in this league. You know, I think sometimes it gets a little bit overtaken by guys that just have straight velocity, but when you're able to control the zone and you don't have confidence issues, if a guy touches, you know, gets a piece of something that you thought was going to be a strikeout pitch, you can last a long time in this league. You know, we look at a guy like Noah Schultz, who's in our own organization, who just is an absolute fireballer. That's a completely different type of pitcher. You know, I think with the Drew Thorpe, sure, he projects as like a three, but that type of confidence, being able to attack hitters, you know, I don't think it's impossible to think that some of these strikeout numbers can really translate as he goes higher through the ranks. And that's going to be the key. What can he do this? Can he continue to strike out batters in AAA? Can he do it at the level that he did in AA in his stint last year? You know, that's going to be the entire key of his development, but I don't think it's completely outside the realm of possibility.
Well, no, of course not, because he's done it. It's about continuing to do it. The problem always becomes when your best pitch is your secondary offering, or in this case, an off-speed pitch, not even a breaking ball, it puts a lot of pressure on your fastball again, because otherwise they'll just start sitting on a slower version of your fastball. Like that's what it comes down to. His best pitch is his changeup. Guys can just sit on that, and he's really not going to blow it by them if they guess wrong. Like they might foul off a 91 or a 92 mile an hour offering if they're looking for a changeup, instead of swinging and missing at a 95 mile an hour fastball or a 96 mile an hour fastball. That's why I place the emphasis on it, not because I need him to be some power pitcher. Dylan Cease's best pitch wasn't his fastball. There are a lot of pitchers whose best pitch isn't their fastball, but they have enough giddy up on it, or at least enough of a good shape of the pitch itself to where it's okay that their fastball is not their best pitch. I'm not saying it's a problem that it is. I'm saying the changeup being the primary offering or the best offering, and then the fastball not being overwhelming on top of it, is an issue. Look at what happened to Giolito. His changeup became his best. Let's use the comp. Giolito's best pitch was his changeup. When that fastball started ticking down in velocity, what started happening to Giolito? It's a different pitcher from when he was 94, 95, 96 versus 92, 93, 94. It's just a concern of mine that if you're going to get an arm, and they clearly placed an emphasis on arms, if you're going to get an arm, and it's a control type command arm, you got to be perfect, and your development has to be good. Everyone used the Giolito comp. I actually went with Dane Dunning, personally, just because I think that's the type of guy he might end up being. I'd prefer to almost see him get away from a true fastball and try something else, if that's what it's going to be. I don't know. Bannister and Katz probably have their own ideas. I'm just not in love with him. I like the other two guys personally a little bit better, but Thorpe's the headliner, and that's what the concern is to me.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring up Dane Dunning, actually, because when I was writing up the trade initially, that was the first name that came to my mind before Giolito, just in terms of who he reminded me of. But also, I would qualify that by saying that Thorpe, while Dunning was, you know, more of a strikeout pitcher in the minors than he has been in the majors, obviously, as most prospects are, Thorpe still seems to be a little better in that department than Dunning was in the minors. So there, again, like, the comp makes sense to me. It's just, I think that, especially considering his age too, Thorpe has a higher ceiling than some might think. And like you said, Jordan, it seems like you like Iriarte better from the pitching side. And that's kind of like a personal preference thing to me, just in that Iriarte, I mean, they're both high strikeout pitchers, but Iriarte takes it to an extreme with much higher rates. But of course, that comes with the common problem of not being able to locate as well and walking more guys, which is why he has some reliever risk. But just like it's kind of personal preference as to which of the two pitchers you might prefer, I also think it's personal preference as to whether you would have been happier with a package with Dylan Lesko, like you said, Jordan, but taking out, you know, one of the other pieces, in that Lesko is a great prospect, but there's so much more inherent risk in any 20-year-old pitching prospect, no matter how good his stuff is. And maybe Thorpe being more of a sure thing is kind of the, to use your term, slam dunk. Not that he's guaranteed to be a good starter, but you at least are confident, reasonably confident, he'll give you some value for Dylan Cease if Zavala and Iriarte bust. But just really quick on Iriarte, he kind of reminds me of Freddie Peralta a little bit, just in if he remains a starter, a kind of guy who could miss the zone a decent amount and walk a lot of guys, but still be very successful just because of how overwhelming this stuff is. So he is very exciting, but I'm just curious kind of what you were alluding to see what Bannister and Katz have in mind for him mechanically and just maybe even in terms of pitch mix, because there are a lot of different avenues he can go, but his ceiling honestly might be the most tantalizing just because of how good the pure stuff is.
I think what you said is something like a sure thing or so. I there was something you said in there, Nick. I think that kind of gets to the crux of it. This package felt too safe. He played too safe in it and kind of just said, hey, we'll get guys that, hey, maybe they're not top-end guys. Iriarte is probably the highest risk, reliever risk, obviously. Zavala has his own risk just being only 18 years old. It felt like they went a little bit too safe. And I would have gone for, personally, instead of trying to spread out the risk over three guys, put it into two. I would say like Iriarte and Zavala, if you would have picked one of them, maybe Zavala and Lesko, and those are your top two guys, that's something a little bit more interesting to me, because you're really buying into the fact that, hey, we're only getting a couple guys. If it really works, great. If it doesn't, oh well. I think the White Sox have enough of potential three starters moving forward. Like, they have the Nestorinis of the world. Eater might be someone like that. I feel like they've accumulated enough guys that project as three, four, five starters. They haven't accumulated enough guys that could potentially be number one starters. I can't think of any. Nestorini's the closest one, and he doesn't project as one. He's just looking like he could be one right now. So I don't know. That's why it's like when you have a Dylan Cease type and you can get a little bit higher level prospect and maybe take on a bit more risk, I feel like you have to try and do that. It felt too safe for me. It's not that it was a bad package, or it's not like they didn't get a lot in return. And it's not like I can't see the upside. I can. I'm not being dense to any of it. I'm just saying the relative safeness of it, I think, is what gets me.
Well, you know, I think Getz is honestly in a really hard spot when it comes to something like that, if I'm going to, you know, defend Chris Getz.
But he put himself there, if you really think about it.
He didn't make any trades before this season, though. Like, he has to build
no.
a farm in his vision. And, you know, building a farm, you have to have, you got to, like, fill it with actual potential players.
Who was building the farm?
But I understand.
Who was building the farm?
Who was making the trades?
I'm talking more so Getz is in a tough I should cut you off too soon, but my assumption was you were going and saying Getz is in a tough spot because the farm system stunk when he took over. Yes, I agree completely. Whose fault was that? Like, who was in charge of player development? Like, that's where I get back to, and I don't want to place all the blame on him. I'm not dense like that. It's when you have a Dylan Cease type player, that is the type of player where you can take the risk of asking for a little bit more of a higher upside guy. Use the trades like with Han did with get all of the depth pieces, the complementary pieces. Get all of those guys when you trade the Lucas Giolitos of the world or the Mike Sorokas or the Eric Fettys. Get the complementary pieces there. Shoot for the upside when you're trading Dylan Cease. Don't just shoot for, hey, you know, if they get Thorpe out of it, at least we got a major leaguer out of Dylan Cease. Like, it feels like that to me. The other two, if they don't end up being anything, that's a lot of risk in those guys. I get that. It feels like with Thorpe, he's like, well, at least we got a guy that's probably going to make the major leagues out of Cease. And if that's the theory behind it, I hate it. I'm not saying it is, but that's how it feels like looking at it.
The entire point I was making about Getz was, like, we need to be able to like round out this entire farm into guys that will, honestly, kind of to what you said about Thorpe, guys that are probably going to make the major leagues. So it's nice to be able to get those high upside, you know, prospects that everybody's talking about, hasn't had a ton of time in the minors, but they're, you know, on everybody's like top 15, 20 to 25 in the top 100 rankings. But there's something to be said about being able to get major league ready talent, eventually major league ready talent, the guys that are on the path that can actually, you know, come onto the field day one and actually look competent. You know, I think it's something that we've struggled with for a while now. You know, with Dylan Cease, I've tried to separate myself from that, from the fact that that was a piece that it was getting. And I'm just trying to look at the value behind that player and what the market looked like for him compared to similar trades that we've seen. And I really think when you're trying to rebuild a farm, I don't think Getz really did terrible on this trade. We'll have those guys that we take shots on that are high potential, but they're very low floor. But rounding out and starting, you know, fresh with this farm system and getting guys that will probably make the majors or are already impressing at a young level, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things there. On the Getz part, there are, you know, a lot of tweets and whatnot going around where it's like, here's a list of all the players Chris Getz has acquired. Like, wow, what a haul. And I'm reading it, and I'm like, is this supposed to impress me? Like, I've been very low on Getz and, frankly, all of his moves, including the trades. I wasn't on the episode where you guys talked with Michael Sparrow about the Gregory Santos and Christian Mana trades. I didn't really like either of those, but this move I really like. And you know, I'm just saying this to try to say, like, I'm not some like hardcore Getz fanboy. This is basically the first time I've ever liked anything that he's done. But one of those reasons, Duke, you mentioned is also Zavala. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about him a little more, just in the sense that at 18 years old, hovering around a 400 on base percentage in single A and hitting 14 homers at that age is very impressive. It's not crazy power, but it's enough where he's not like, you know, some noodle bat or whatever people like to call like Benintendi these days. Like overall, I think why I like the package is because it gives the White Sox farm, while maybe to Jordan's point, it's not the highest upside in the world or the highest upside it could have been, it gives the farm three things that it was lacking, in that Zavala, other than Edgar Carroll, the Sox don't really have anyone in the farm who's like an on base percentage first kind of guy, like a walk first kind of guy. And in Thorpe, they got someone with better command or control than pretty much anyone in a farm full of honestly pretty good pitching prospects right now. And in Iriarte, they got someone who might have the best stuff in the farm, and that's a farm that includes Noah Schultz. Like, that's not, you know, something that should be said lightly. So I just kind of like the way that it, I wouldn't say attacked weaknesses necessarily, because pitching wasn't weak but the way that it sort of bolstered what was already there, but not necessarily in a dull way, other than I can see the argument for, to Jordan's point, it was a lot of mid-rotation starter types. But that's where Iriarte might come in. You know, he does have that more top rotation potential if he can get the control.
I'm not disagreeing with any of the points necessarily. I'm still looking for where the impact is going to come when this team is good again. I don't know where it is. Is it, it's Montgomery and Robert and who else? Like, someone else has to make an like, if you fill your rotation with threes, is that good enough? Like, I don't think so. Someone's got to be an ace. We've seen what happens when you don't really have a true ace. This was the, I guess the reason I remain so frustrated is because this was supposed to be the trade where you got someone like that. And I just don't think they did. Zavala's still a ways down the line. He could be a stud. Great. Iriarte weighs away a little bit. Not a ways away, but he's still a little bit away. That's where I sit with this. It's just, it's a frustration that I was looking for this to be the one where you got one more impact guy and really felt good about yourself, kind of up the middle and having an arm in there too. And I just don't see where now we have literally stripped this thing to the studs except Luis Robert. And I feel no better about when this team is going to compete again. Like, at least when they did this the first time, you had a general sense of when here's where guys start coming, here's where the impact starts coming. I don't know when that's happening still. And we've stripped it down, and there's still not a clear timeline.
Yeah, well, I think it's really difficult, you know, because kind of what you're alluding to was the Chris Sale trade, I'm assuming, the first time we did it. I mean, the big difference with that was, having Luis Robert, being able to sign him without really giving up much. Ole Jimenez obviously came in the Jose Quintana trade, but even when Jose Quintana got traded, was it really earth-shattering to either of you personally, for being honest?
No, but they got good talent. I'd argue they got a better package for Quintana than they did now for a better pitcher than Quintana was.
Yeah, but the Cubs fluttered that trade. No team should have paid as much as the Cubs paid for Jose Quintana.
Correct. But you could still have gotten a true impact piece out of Dylan Cease.
I really, really think you're sleeping on Drew Thorpe, dude. I almost want this to come back and burn you because I really think Drew Thorpe's going to be a guy.
For it to have to burn me, he would have to be the legitimate ace of this staff for 5 years.
Dylan Cease wasn't the ace of the staff for 5 years.
But he had ace-like talent. You didn't get a guy with ace-like talent in this. Drew Thorpe does not have ace-like talent. Dylan Cease, from the moment he was drafted, was, could be an ace.
Okay, all right. So define ace-type talent then, because I want to know what this is, so I can understand.
Ranking second in a Cy Young season once in his career. That's ace-like potential. If you put Dylan Cease at the top of a rotation, you feel pretty good about your chances every 5 days.
But outside of that, what else are we talking here? Like, what are the qualifiers is what I'm kind of asking.
Numbers wise or what? Like, the general stuff you have, the general makeup of your arsenal, all of that is what makes you an ace type player, on top of being able to go deep into games and stuff and so on and so forth. But that's all of the stuff that with Thorpe, it's like, again, the comp of using Giolito is a good one, Dunning, whatever you want to do. It's like the stuff doesn't project as an ace because the fastball isn't overwhelming. The best pitch is the changeup. And the fastball isn't good enough at current, accepting that, at current, to project to make up for any mistakes he makes with the off-speed or the breaking pitches. That's where the concern, like, if he's a three starter, that's exactly what I would have expected him to be. Like, I just don't think that's enough for Dylan Cease.
I will say to spell that, though, and it's something that doesn't get discussed enough, but he also does have a slider. Like, I want to see what his
right.
His pitch sequencing looks like once he actually gets a Baseball Savant page, because obviously they don't really focus too much on the lower minors. But he, from what I've seen from his slider, there's definitely something there, and his ability to be able to control the zone while being able to throw that slider is something that's really going to work in his advantage, and that's something that a lot of young pitchers have very, very much have issues with. That's why Dylan, you know, with as talented as his stuff was, it was fastball slider for the most part.
But it worked.
what I'm saying is, if we're kind of discussing about what an ace has, being able to attack the zone, have confidence with it, and being able to have three pitches, not just two, to work with, because I feel like that's something that works against.
He had three. Fastball, slider, curveball. Oh,
he had three barely pitches. Touched that curveball towards the end, though.
That doesn't mean it wasn't a legitimate third offering.
And it was actually knuckle curveball, and as much as I loved that pitch from Dylan, and I wish he used it more, he really had a hard time controlling it at times. Like,
but it's a legitimate third offering.
But I'm saying a legitimate third offering is something you can throw with consistency and you always know where it's going to go. And that's something that Drew Thorpe does have in his slider. He's able to control.
But does the fastball count? Fangraphs rates it a 35 grade fastball, 70 grade changeup. Awesome. 50 grade future slider. Is that going to be an ace of a staff with that kind of stuff? It's going to be damn hard is my point. And it'll be a credit to him if in 3 years he is like truly an ace in Major League Baseball. It is going to be a credit to him because his stuff does not project to be a starter. Doesn't mean he can't, or does not project to be an ace. Doesn't mean he can't be. But I'm saying this, the odds of it are too low for my liking personally to have gotten him as part of Dylan's Cease package. If they got him in like a Lucas Giolito package last year, great, awesome. You basically replaced the same type of talent, except you got more years of control, and maybe, you know, you get him in your system, you develop him, he changes. And Getz said it today, Thorpe could pitch in the majors this season. That's what they were looking for. I just disagree with the strategy of it. Like, yeah, they want to turn this around quick, I get it, but in order to turn around quick, you got to get some impact from somewhere. You can't just fill your rotation with threes and say, yep, we got all these guys to the majors. We got a bunch of talent. We brought them up from the farm, and now they're contributing. You need impact.
So you've used the term impact a lot, and it's just really hard to see immediate impact from any prospect in baseball. Like, I understand what you're saying when it comes to impact.
What do you mean immediate impact from prospects in baseball? You don't think Jackson Holliday comes up this year and makes immediate impact in the Orioles lineup?
Okay, we're talking...
Prospects can do that.
Not prospects that get traded, though. Like, those prospects, don't, you even said it yourself, they don't get traded.
You're talking about a prospect that's... You're talking about, like, literally one of the best prospects in baseball.
Right, but Nick, to your point, yes, those prospects don't get traded anymore. I completely agree. But I'm saying it's got to be someone with a little bit higher upside leading the package. Like, that's why I say Dylan Lesko, yes, there's way more risk, absolutely. It's not nearly as safe as a package if you replace Lesko with Thorpe. But the upside is higher. The potential to turn around and say, yeah, we got a real top-tier talent out of this is higher for me. That's my point. Like, again, Thorpe's not a bad pitcher. I just think it's a safe three, and I didn't want to lead a package for Dylan Cease with a safe three.
I mean, it's really hard for me to get too overly like negative about the idea of getting a 23-year-old guy possibly being able to step in the rotation this year.
I'm coming off wrong. I'm not mad about the fact that we got Drew Thorpe. I said it was a B to B plus trade. I was just hoping we shot for a little bit more, is what I'm saying. I think he'll probably be in this rotation. Yeah, just like Getz said, potentially later this year. Sure, that's awesome. He has good enough stuff to be in the major leagues. I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying, like, where is the high level impact? Where is the ace of this future staff? Where is the middle of the order bat? All we have are a bunch of guys that look like they're going to be contributing pieces, but won't really be the ones that really take the team to the next level. They'll make sure the team gets there because they're good complementary pieces. But outside of Colson Montgomery and Luis Robert, where's that impact talent? Where's the next Dylan Cease? Where's the next idea of what Michael Kopech could have been? I don't know right now. And I was hoping that they would get it from this package. I'm not saying Drew Thorpe's not a good pitcher or that it's bad that I'd be upset if he was just a major league talent. I'm saying these are good things, but I don't see where the high level impact is coming from this time through with this rebuild.
As far as this trade, I agree to that. Like, we didn't get a earth shattering type of pitching prospect out of this trade, but I really think we're glancing over the idea of what Noah Schultz can be.
But that's still like, 2, 3, 4 years down the line. So now the timeline, again, to the point of the timeline, it's like, when is this going to happen? When is this team going to be good? Yeah, Noah Schultz could be the ace, absolutely. But that's still a little too far down the line.
I think with where the White Sox are, that's the best we can really look at right now. Because I just don't think we could have found a player, and I don't think a team was willing to trade him. And I think you can look at the Yankees playing hardball with us as that can attest to this. We weren't going to get that level of impact prospect from a Dylan Cease trade. That's just kind of where the market is. That's where other teams are going to view it. I love Dylan Cease. Like I said earlier on in this episode, I went to bat for Dylan Cease a lot through the early on of his process. Like, I will defend the talent that Dylan Cease has. Outside of that, you know, runner-up finish in Cy Young, he's had some inconsistent seasons. Like we all kind of thought after that Cy Young season that he was going to come out and kind of set the world on fire the next season. I think we can all admit that didn't necessarily happen. He kind of ran into some struggles here and there. I think that's the biggest thing teams were kind of leveraging against us, was this isn't a guy like similar to, you know, we were talking about the Chris Sale trade. Chris Sale, every single season he started for the White Sox, we knew exactly what we were getting, and we were getting one of the best pitchers in baseball. There was no denying that. Dylan didn't just give us that level of consistency, and that's just the short and long of it, unfortunately. Teams are going to leverage that against us, and with the ability to leverage that against us, we were going to have teams across the board not be willing to give up with that super highly touted MLB, fairly MLB-ready prospect.
And the only reason I potentially disagree with that is because I'm seeing how Getz... I'm sensing now the way Getz is trading is that he's preferring... He wants three guys back. He wanted three guys back for Dylan Cease. Versus what Rick Hahn tended to do was... And maybe it's just... again, it's personal preference... He went for one, made sure like, hey, there is one impact guy out of this or one higher end prospect out of this. And then like no one remembers the third and fourth names in the Cease trade. Like that's just how it is. Or the Sale trade is another example. No one remembers the third and fourth names in that trade either. And I'm not saying, like I said, Robbie Snelling, those types of players were off the table. But if you went Dylan Lesko, Samuel Zavala, and then two guys I won't remember in 5 years. I would have just personally preferred that. I think that this came off this way because of how Getz looks like he prefers to trade, which is get a few more pieces out of it. That's just how I view it.
Yeah, couple things to that. First, Jordan, I'll say Basabe, Diaz, Rose, and Fleet were the four, the throw-in pieces. Just because I happen to remember all four. I mean, Basabe was actually not a terrible prospect. Anyway, and as for the rest of it, I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. It kind of comes down to your definition of impact being just like more ceiling, I think. And these days, at least my view is you don't get that unless it's somebody who is very far away, like maybe a high school or a pitcher who was drafted out of high school, for example. And there's just so much more risk there, as we've talked about, that I can understand why teams are more shying away from it. Like, if you wanted a really high ceiling player who is not, you know, a 19, 20 year old pitcher, you're probably not getting him for Dylan Cease because, like you said,
right? Correct.
Yeah, Chris Sale was just a better pitcher and had an extra year of control. Quintana, maybe not a better pitcher, but had a half year of control. I don't think that can be completely discounted. So there are a lot of moving parts here. I mean, I think all the arguments being made are fair. It really just comes down to what do you value in a package. And you say, you know, you see how Getz operates. Maybe he wants that safer package. That might be true. I don't know if that's exactly what happened here. It might be the case. But in this particular instance, I'm not trying to like hate on Dylan Cease, but coming off of the season he had, I don't think it was as much of a down year as people say when they really dig into it, but it was still objectively not as good as the prior year or years. Coming off of that season with 2 years left, I still am happy with the return just because Thorpe, you know, seems like he'll probably be a decent enough starter. Iriarte should contribute to some extent, whether it's as a reliever or as a starter. Zavala, way too far away, but the potential is really there. So it's three real prospects, and we haven't even talked about the reliever who has like 4 or 5 years of control, so at least there's that. But
he's 29, though.
Yeah, no, I don't, well, actually, Let me do this now really quick, just because we're probably not going to talk about him again. The reliever, Steven Wilson. one question for you guys. So last year, the MLB ground ball percentage was 42.5%, like on average. That's how often a ground ball was hit. Starting with Jordan, I guess, because you're unmuted right now. What was Steven Wilson's ground ball percentage last year, given the average of 42?
30.
All right, Duke?
38.2.
All right, not bad guesses in a vacuum, but the answer is 12%. And no, that's not, like, I didn't look at the wrong column. It's literally 12%.
That's not good at guaranteed rate field, gentlemen.
It's not good, but he has, like, a 25% pop-up rate. Like, he is such a weird pitcher. He throws, like, 60% sliders, gets, like, a ton of pop-ups, and the fly balls, yeah, that's the concern. And home runs are his issue, but he's not a bad reliever. It's just kind of funny. I've never seen that profile before, so I thought I'd mention it.
That is a wild profile. I need to dig more into him. I think the consensus is we all need to dig in a little bit more, but on the surface, I think we've definitely scratched the idea of where the high upside is for each of these guys. Some, obviously, a little younger, higher than others. I think, Nick, kind of the way you said, and this is kind of my final point because I have talked way too much, I need to shut up, is the idea that, you know, it kind of combines what everyone said. You know, Noah Schultz could be that ace, but that's a couple seasons away. And if you want potential high top of the rotation impact talent nowadays, you can't trade for it necessarily unless it's they're 19 or 20 years old. Because of those factors, that's why I would have preferred that package. Because this timeline tends to me that it's going to be longer than the last rebuild was. You'll have nice pieces like a Montgomery still in there, and this team will slowly be getting better. They'll remind me kind of like the Cardinals. They'll probably keep themselves close. They really won't be the overwhelming team, but they're going to have enough of that complementary talent to start getting better. But if you're looking for when this team's really like, oh man, watch out for this team to be World Series contenders, that's still a little bit down the line. And because of that, that's why I would have gone with that type of a package.
You know, you brought up the Cardinals right there. And, like, honestly, they kind of have a history of doing what you just said. I don't hate that. I don't hate the idea of, like, you know, like,
just being in it. Yeah.
Being competitive every year, bringing up a lot of homegrown talent.
Right.
The only downside is we just don't go sign big talent, which is what puts them over the top. That's the only issue. But
yeah, I would have no issue with that. I completely agree. My point more so is you already have enough of that talent. You already have enough of the 3-4 complementary pieces. And you have a couple impact guys in Robert and Montgomery, and maybe even Ramos, to be honest with you. You already have enough potential impact guys to where, yeah, now you've added Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams added most of the complementary pieces last offseason. You got a few more when you traded Bummer, except I hated that trade still. Regardless, you're already trending to where you can get to be respectable in the next year or two, the Cardinals type way. But if you're trading Dylan Cease, you don't need guys who are going to be complementary pieces anymore. You need the impact. Let's push it down a line a little bit and help really put this team over the top. That's why I would have preferred it that way. Being the Cardinals of the AL Central would be awesome. I just don't think they needed Drew Thorpe to do it, is my point.
Watch Eric Fetty just have this, like, Rocky level, like, season where he's probably like when he listens, if he ever listens to this episode, he's just going to be like just clenching his fist the entire time, just being like, they're not even thinking about me. I'm about to set the entire major league by storm. I did it overseas. I'm going to do it in the majors. They don't even know what's coming.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with him. I'd love to see him turn around.
I would too. But like my final point on this trade, because I feel like we covered basically all of really my thoughts on a lot of these guys as well. I do think Iriarte projects more as a bullpen guy to start his career, and I think that's how they're going to go about it. And I think he's a guy that can eventually go to the starting rotation. But, you know, honestly, Laz, and I really wasn't thinking about it too much before we started recording, but the more you've brought up, like, the idea of, like, these impact types of prospects that can actually be legitimate stars, I'm really going to keep an eye on Samuel Zavala, like, quite a bit, because not only were his stats impressive at his young of an age, His swing is beautiful. He's a lefty bat, for those who don't know. He's very athletic. Snagged, I believe, 21 bases last season throughout the course of the two leagues that he played in. And he's 6'1", and he's only 175 pounds. Like, there's a frame right there that he could easily still add some muscle, still add some weight, and working in a major league weight room, hopefully for like the next 2-3 years, could really add to the potential power in him, because I think all the intangibles are there. I think he's somebody that kind of flew under the radar, and reading up the information that I did on him once this trade broke, there's a lot of prospect guys that, you know, they kept him out of the top 100, but every list I saw of the people that just missed the cut, he was on damn near every single one of those lists. And I think the upside potentially could be a legitimate star there in the making.
I think we all agree on the talent, to be honest with you. I think it's just our opinion on the trade itself. I think we've all done a pretty good job evaluating. Yeah, here's where the potential real high upside is going to come from. I for as much as we disagreed this episode, I feel like we agreed on a ton too, interestingly enough. But
yeah, I'm with you there. I was actually pretty positive this episode for once, but then Duke mentioned Eric Fetty, and I'm like, internally, I'm just like, oh no. Like, I like the Fetty son. I'm not trying to hate on him, but more so just like this team, I'm not. I took the under. Like, I hope I'm wrong on that, but we'll see how the season goes. I also do have to issue one retraction. I said I wasn't looking at the wrong column for that ground ball percentage, and I was not looking at the wrong column. But for some reason, I forgot that Fangraphs also includes spring training stats now. So that 12% was spring training. Last season was still very low. The ground ball rate for that for Wilson, the reliever, was still 24%. So still, you know, way below the average of 42. But yeah, not 12.
I was closer.
That's true.
Shout out to our editing team that can try to find a way to just put that 24%.
It's not happening. You're looking at the editing team. It's not happening. It's not happening.
It's all right. I'll bite the bullet. I was wrong.
What do we pay you for?
I'm just going to cut you out of this episode. That's what you pay me for.
I appreciate that. No, honestly, like, even when it gets heated between me and Laz, you know, for all the folks at home, if this is the first episode you ever listen to, I love these types of discussions because it kind of just, it gives us all different stuff to think about. You know, we all kind of came in with an idea of how we felt about the trade, how we felt about the prospects. And honestly, we talked about different prospects in the Sox system that we all kind of had predetermined, you know, thoughts on too. And, you know, I think we're all going to come away with this with a little bit more to chew on, you know, and I think that's the type of discussions I like to see. And I wish we saw that a little bit more on the former Bird app, you know, that Twitter place. Wish we saw that a little bit more without it just turning into genuine just arguments, you know, and people being angry and probably projecting a little bit. But yeah, I feel really good about that discussion. And I think I feel a lot better about that discussion than I feel about the Chicago White Sox personally.
Yep, same here.
That's something we can agree on.
Low bar.
Look at that. We all ended friends.
All right, so I'll be moving into your spare bedroom probably like next week.
Don't push it.
But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have this week for the Sox on 35th podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the website, Sox on 35th, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Sox on 35th to stay up to date with your Chicago White Sox. Also, be sure to check out anything that Michael Suero is going to be posting, because I guarantee he's about to get prospect crazy after this trade. He was very excited about it in the Sox on 35th group chat. So I'm only imagining the type of content he's going to put out. Very excited for it. This has been Duke Coughlin, joined as always by Jordan Lazowski and Nick Gower. We will be back eventually as we cover another week of White Sox baseball. Thank you, and go Sox.
Go Sox.
Thank you, Dylan Cease. Go Sox.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it, but I thought that too.
I thought you would, honestly.
No, it's Ross.
Too soon. Yeah.
Yep.